Has the offering already been collected? Wow. Man, I didn't even see that. I've been busy up here, I guess, trying to get ready. So, well, this is a change from what we would normally do. But I wanted to mention this because of what's taking place in our country concerning, is this a nation that would be called a democracy? That's what I want to discuss. Brandon would be much better at this, but he can correct me if I'm wrong on this. But it's just something that I thought, you know, I need to address this because of all the talk that's taking place. And I thought of it when I was preparing for this morning's message and what is taking place in our world and the emphasis today in political discussion. I mean, obviously, Thursday was our day celebrating the day of our nation's Declaration of Independence from tyranny. That's what our Declaration of Independence says. And so I wanted to talk about this much talk of democracy. It's the buzzword of the Democrats. That, you know, this is against democracy. And this guy's against democracy. And everything's against democracy. And we are a nation founded as a democracy. And that's a lie. And so we need to talk about that. But we want to start with prayer. Brandon, would you stand and lead us, please?
Heavenly Father, we thank you for this opportunity to review the structure of our government and how it is predicated upon biblical principles. We thank you that we are most likely one of the few churches that will care enough to actually educate ourselves in this matter. So Lord, I ask that you would educate us today.
Amen. I appreciate Brandon praying that way because I feel it's my responsibility to educate people, depending upon where you're getting your news, where you're getting your influences, to understand what's taking place. Brad, if you would hit those lights, it's kind of washing out the screen. Would appreciate that. In fact, Brother Paul, could you get these side windows? That'll just help out a little bit better to show because the background, it may be all right. I just want to make sure that we can see very well. I've copied a lot of information here. I was telling my wife yesterday or the day before that I collect articles like crazy. And most of them are on my computer. I probably have what I call my illustration file that probably has 2,000 articles on it that I've copied and pasted and highlighted. And so when I start doing that, I created a search engine where I put it in an Excel spreadsheet. So if I type one word in, it gives me the occurrence of everything I did. And so all I did is I went into my illustration file and typed the word Republic. So much that I have. Obviously, if you do a Republic, it also shows Republican and so forth, which is right in line with what we're talking about. And so I want to look at that today. And so you're going to see a lot of quotes, and some of it I'm just going to read because I could have spent a lot of time just copying and pasting into the PowerPoint, and that's not my purpose. But I like you to see it in the PowerPoint because when you both read and hear it, you pick up more on what we're talking about. Amen. So let me put this. The real reason Democrats want everyone to use the word democracy is because their party is named after it. Ergo, they are its defenders. The opposite could be said of the GOP as well, but Republicans have the advantage of the Constitution establishing a republic. Thought that was interesting. And here's just an illustration as we get into this thing of republic, not versus democracy, but republic and democracy. It's not that it's a versus. Democracy is used in our Republican form of government. But a republic is what elected Trump in 2016. A democracy would have elected Hillary Clinton. That's why leftists break out in hives when anyone uses the word republic. And it is. It's true. A republic elected our president. What aspect of a republic allowed President Trump to be president in 2016? Brandon, you can't answer this because I know you already know. But if nobody else can, I'm going to turn it over to you. What part of our republic, Juanita? Electoral College. Right, Brandon? It was Electoral College. Otherwise, you'd have that wicked witch of the West, you know, in the White House, or she would have been. I was watching a news report regarding a CNN reporter whose report reflects a major but intended flaw, I should say, in America's educational system, especially in the area of civics. Reporter Donnie O'Sullivan, who hails from the one who writes this article writes this, who hails from the Republic of Ireland, conducted a man-on-the-street interview about the supposed threat to democracy posed by Donald Trump and all of us. When many interviewees told him that we live in a republic, not a democracy, how many saw this? None of you saw it. That's why I'm talking about this. You're not seeing this in the news. He was shocked and appalled by what was clearly, quote, an attack on democracy. So this CNN reporter is interviewing these Trump supporters after a Trump rally, and he's saying, what do you think? Don't you think Trump's going to destroy democracy? Well, they say, most of them say, well, you need to understand something. We live in a republic, not a democracy. He got real upset because he's been taught all along that we live in a democracy. Okay? So after this happened, this is the way they wrote it, he scurried to the newsroom for an interview with historian Ann Applebaum to disprove these backward MAGA types. Quote, I've heard a lot of conspiracy theories, he fretted. I hear a lot of things out on the road, but to hear Americans, people who had described themselves as patriots, say that America is not a democracy, that stopped me in my tracks. And so this Applebaum lady delivered the desired authoritative line, asserting without evidence, America is a democracy. It was founded as a democracy. And the writer of this article says, paging Benjamin Franklin, James Madison, and John Adams, Applebaum had a point when she said, honestly, the word democracy and the word republic have often been used interchangeably. And you can go back and you're going to see Ronald Reagan talking about the fact that we are a democracy. George Bush saying that we are a democracy. And he mentions that in his article. In fact, I watched that CNN report. I watched that CNN reporter. And they play a clip of Ronald Reagan saying, we need to defend our democracy. Sometimes you can use those interchangeably. But today, you can't. We need to start using the word that we are a republic. But then this Applebaum said, there isn't a meaningful difference between democracy and republic. Again, Madison disagreed. Let me quote Madison up here. In explaining our Constitution, James Madison outlined some differences between republics and democracies in Federalist Number 10. He wrote, hence it is that such democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. Now, James Madison, really called the father of our Constitution, knows what he's talking about there. You've all heard this quote by Benjamin Franklin, a republic, if you can keep it, Benjamin Franklin answered when asked what kind of government had been established by the 1787 Constitutional Convention. He didn't say a democracy, if you can keep it. He said a republic. But you look at my title, a Republican form of government. You're saying, well, you're just pushing Republicans and Democrats as opposed to Democrats. No. Where in our Constitution will you find the word democracy? It is not there. You know what word is there? Well, let me read you from Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, the very first statement. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union, and here's our title, a Republican form of government. A Republican form of government. That word democracy is not in our Declaration of Independence either. So clearly, folks, I wanted to say from the very start, so that this nails you between the eyes, that you never forget this, we live in a republic, not a democracy. You could say, how do they say it? A democratic republic. More accurately, a constitutional republic is the way I like to put it, because it's in our Constitution. In 1776, John Adams wrote, "There is no good government but what is republican." A year earlier, he wrote, "They define a republic to be a government of laws and not of men." Now, we spent a lot of time in this class. Was it 2 years ago? We looked at the 2 summers ago when Brandon taught our history as a nation. And then I taught from a biblical perspective, was the American Revolution justified biblically? He said it was justified both historically and legally. I did the biblically part. And I spent a lot of time on, okay, who is the king in our country? Because you read in Romans chapter 13. You read in 1 Timothy chapter 2. You read in 1 Peter chapter 2. How that we are to pray for those in authority. We are to obey those in authority and so forth. And people use that to say, see, whatever they say, whatever the president says, you better do. Right? No. Who's the king in our country? Constitution is. So if you weren't here for that, you missed it. Of course, Adams also said our Constitution. Oh, wait just a second. Might have missed this one. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. That's something to ponder at a time when groomers target kids and people who don't even know what a woman is claim that she has a right to abort her child. And the reason I quoted this and put this up there is because today you see what's happening in our nation. And if our republic is to stand, it has to be among a people, as John Adams said there, a moral and religious people. And of course, when you say the Pledge of Allegiance, we're talking about a republic. Do we say, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the democracy for which it stands? No. And when you sing the battle hymn of the republic, not democracy? Yeah, you can see the line I put through democracy. I'm looking at mine going, I can't even see that line. Our founders deliberately moved us away from a monarchy and to a republic while eschewing democracy. What's eschewing mean? Job eschewed evil. So what's eschew mean? What's that? Turn away. They were not interested in a democracy. That's important background for CNN's latest effort to misinform the American people. As the saying goes, democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner. Now think about that, because that is funny, but that is true. That is what democracy is. Because democracy is the tyranny of the majority, the tyranny of the mob. Whatever the majority says, that's what we're going to do. And what do you think's going to happen if everybody becomes wolves in sheep's clothing? What do you think they're going to vote for when you, the sheep, are around? They're going to say, let's eat him. And the majority rules. The Republican form of government was a protection to, and I'm getting ahead. I better just go back on this. Why not a democracy? I got this from, we homeschooled our boys, and Juanita used the Bob Jones University Press. And this is from the American Republic. What grade level was that? I was looking at the book, and I could not find what grade level it was. seventh or eighth grade. And they had this little section here, why not a democracy? And I thought it was pretty good. Why did the leaders who wrote the Constitution choose to form a republic rather than a democracy? They had learned from their many experiences in colonial, revolutionary, and confederation days that what the people wanted could change and that their wants could be easily manipulated. The writers did not want the wishes of small groups to be overrun by the changing attitudes of the majority. In other words, they did not want a government based on mob rule. Thus, they specified in the Constitution what each branch of the government could and could not do. These men knew that in a true democracy, the rules for governing could change whenever the wishes of the majority changed. But in a republic, the rules could be changed only by changing the Constitution. Consequently, these early leaders concluded that a republican form of government would best ensure the freedoms of all the American people. The republican form of government they developed was different from all the forms of government tried before. Their new American republic, however, would become a model for many governments that followed. John Adams said, "Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself." There was never a democracy that did not commit suicide. Do you know what the next step is from democracy? If you truly have just a democratic form, what is the very next step? But, and those are all true, but there's one I'm looking at. It's socialism. It's communism, which is tyranny. That's the next thing that takes place. And what is taking place in the Democrat side of the political spectrum today? Marxism. Democratic socialist / Marxists. Chief Justice John Marshall added, "Between a balanced republic and a democracy, the difference is like that between order and chaos, anarchy." The founders knew that a democracy would lead to the same kind of tyranny suffered under King George III. Their vision for us was a republic. This is going to keep on being emphasized. It was a republic. America was founded in response to tyranny. Tyranny is a government in which a single ruler is vested with absolute power. I'm going to put up two mentions of tyranny in our Declaration of Independence. There's actually four mentions, but I'm going to mention two. Here's what those who wrote the Declaration and voted on the Declaration understood. The history of the present king of Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. There's one mention, tyranny. And we need to understand, as Brandon pointed out a couple years ago, that's what was taking place in our country. It was tyrannical what was taking place in our colonies. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. As you remember, we did not want to separate from Great Britain initially. We tried everything to stay together. We tried everything to be unified. But our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Again, our founders did everything possible they could when they established our form of government to prevent future tyrannical rule. The founders expressed contempt for the tyranny of majority rule. You see that? They called majority rule tyrannical. And throughout our Constitution, they placed impediments to that tyranny. Here's some examples. Two houses of Congress pose one obstacle to majority rule. That is, 51 senators can block the wishes of 435 representatives and 49 other senators. Think about that. 51 people can block as far as Congress is concerned. And here's something else you need to understand. Is the Senate itself democratic? It is not. The Senate is undemocratic, but that's what the founders intended it to be. By giving lower population states equal senatorial power with higher population states, the founders ensured that the more populous states would not overwhelm the less populous ones and established a tyranny of the majority. America is not a democracy. It is a republic, and that's what the founders created, and that's why individual freedoms have been protected and Americans have prospered. Understand that. We have the freedoms we have today, and we've had them for 248 years because we are a republic. They would have been long gone had we been established as a democracy, because a democracy murders itself, remember? The president can veto the wishes of 535 members of Congress. Actually, they can actually override it, but it takes two-thirds of both houses of Congress to override a presidential veto. To change the Constitution requires not a majority, but a two-thirds vote of both houses. And if an amendment is approved, it requires ratification by three-fourths of state legislatures. I learned that very well back in the 1970s when they had what they call the Equal Rights Amendment. I forget how many states had already ratified it, but there were some holdouts. They just could not get past the threshold. I think the threshold is you have to have 38. Is that right? 38. I think you have to have 38 states to pass something, to ratify that as an amendment to the Constitution, and they just could not get it. And it died, to the pleasure of many, many in our country. And then what we referred to earlier, the Electoral College, is yet another measure that thwarts majority rule. It makes sure that the highly populated states, today mainly 12 on the east and west coasts, cannot run roughshod over the rest of the nation. That forces a presidential candidate to take into consideration the wishes of the other 38 states. Maybe that's where I got 38. Questions or comments thus far? Rod. Oh, maybe could we get him the mic? Just sorry about that, Rod. Stay there close, Brandon. You might have to answer this.
Yeah. When you said a democracy, a good illustration is two wolves and one sheep,
yes,
voting on what's for dinner. How would you define a republic based on the same?
Oh, what illustration would you use?
Yes.
Oh, that's a good one. How would you illustrate that? They would have to send a representative. But the thing is that the process would be stymied. You couldn't just say, okay, vote. Okay, go do it. No, now you republic has to have laws. And so the law would say no wolves can eat sheep, so to speak. And okay, if you're gonna have the wolves eat the sheep, there's got to be, now you got to have the houses of Congress vote for this. You've got to have the president sign it into legislation, and so forth and so on. But even that has to go according to the Constitution, the law. And so there's all kinds of roadblocks that keep this from happening. So if you two wolves want to eat that sheep sitting right behind you, okay, just fine, but you're going to have to propose that. It's going to have to go before the House. Well, they're not going to pass it because you guys, bunch of wolves. You go to the Senate. It's got to be passed in both houses, and then it's got to go to the president. He's got to sign it, which our president would do today. And that's, you know, we laugh, but that's true. He would do it. And then it could be overthrown before, because there would be challenges from people saying, wait a second, I know the House and the Senate passed it, and I know the president signed this. But Supreme Court, what do you say? You've got the checks and balances here. And the Supreme Court's going to go, that's not constitutional, sorry. That's gone. So that's the difference. Majority rule, Democratic rule. You two want that? Sorry, Herman. But now you've got to go through this process. And that's why, by the way, there hasn't been a second American Revolution, because we are following what we believe is best. We're Americans. We go to the voting. We still go to the voting booth. We do everything according to the Constitution. But what do you do when they change election laws? And when there's fraud in the election process, now what are we going to do? we're still trying to do it the right way. Carol?
To answer that particular question, I heard today that they were looking for 100,000 election, not judges, but people to ensure that the elections are going smoothly. So that was interesting that you said that. Mike, I was thinking about this from a spiritual standpoint, and a democracy celebrated Jesus on Palm Sunday, and a democracy a week later called for Barabbas instead of Jesus.
That is so good, because when you look at what was said earlier in this, what were they saying? It's on the whims. It's what people want on that day. I tell you, when our country was founded and our founders did this, people marveled. But the way our government was formed did not happen overnight. It was torturous when you read American history. It was torturous. And there were violent arguments in Philadelphia. Not violent as far as people shooting each other, but I mean, there were people standing up and accusing other people. And it was all of the Lord that we have what we have today. Somebody else, Reuben or Brandon, anybody? Okay. Something preceded the American Revolution that I believe was of God. And this is not often noted, but I think you need to be aware of it. How many of you are familiar with what is called the Great Awakening? You have some idea of what the Great Awakening was. Okay. When Brandon taught his class on the history of the American Revolution, the Enlightenment was part of it. I don't remember if you mentioned the Great Awakening. I think you did. I'm not sure. But I believe that the Great Awakening, the spiritual revivals that took place in our nation prior to even the 1760s, was used of the Lord in the hearts of man. And one of the things that really got me on this was I was reading John Adams years ago, and it was said this. This is what was said. Reflecting on the American Revolution in 1818, okay, Adams would die 8 years later. Yeah, 2026 on the 50th anniversary. In 1818, he observed, "But what do we mean by the American Revolution? Do we mean the American War?" he asked. He follows this way, "The revolution was effected before the war commenced. If the revolution was in the minds and hearts of the people, a change in their religious sentiments, of their duties and obligation, this radical change in the principles, opinions, sentiments, and affections of the people was the real American Revolution." Now, obviously, the war was fought, but it was based upon the change that had been taking place in people's hearts and minds. Yes, it was due to the tyrannical things that were taking place, but even that had another foundation, and it was the freedom found in the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I just think it's interesting that we understand that. What I'm going to show you now comes from a man by the name of William Federer, who's an interesting writer, and he simplifies things by putting them in small bites. And so he gets very lengthy, but almost everything he says, you wanted to stop and consider every little bite that he gives you. And so let me just go through this very quickly, and then I'm going to be done. Done a lot sooner than I thought. He said the word demos in democracy means people, and krisi means to rule. And so you've got the rule by people. That's what democracy is. A democracy is where citizens are king, ruling directly. Democracy in the broad definition refers to the population being involved in ruling a popular government. Democracy, though, as a specific political system, only ever worked on a small-scale, citywide basis, as every citizen had to be present at every meeting to talk about every issue. Have you ever wondered why in this country we just don't vote on everything? Folks, you'd be at the voting booth every day. simply doesn't work. But a true democracy is you vote on everything. Everything. If it grew larger than a city, that is the population, it broke down as logistically not every citizen could be there every day. A republic could grow larger as citizens could take care of their families and farms and send representatives in their place to go to the market to talk politics every day. Where in a democracy, citizens are kings, our king ruling directly, being physically present at every meeting, a republic is where the citizens are king, ruling indirectly through their representatives. Everybody getting it? It's a lot to think about. Americans pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands. We are basically pledging allegiance to us being in charge of ourselves. Webster's 1828 dictionary defined republic as a state in which the exercise of the sovereign power is lodged in representatives elected by the people. So we democratically elect those who represent us. When someone protests the flag, I like this. What they're effectively saying is, I don't want to be king anymore. I protest this system where I participate in ruling myself. A constitutional republic is where representatives of the people are limited by a set of rules, Rod and Carol, wolves, having defined functions within temporary power and instructions on how to vote them out. And that's why we continue to use our representative form of government, our republic, to counter what's taking place in our nation right now. The only thing that matters to Democrats is power. Anything that facilitates the acquisition of that power, they call democracy. Anything that gets in their way is a threat to democracy, including voters knowing that we live in a republic. And that's exactly right. They want you, this is what they do with lies. They keep repeating and repeating and repeating the same lie. We live in a democracy. We live in a democracy. We live in a democracy. We do not. We live in a republic. We have a Republican form of government, not a Democratic form of government. But if they keep repeating it, you're going to soon believe it. And then anything that goes against democracy, you're going to go, well, that's wrong. And you will soon yourselves vote yourselves to be under tyranny once more. And that, I end it with that, although I do have one more thing. But I want to leave time to any questions or comments on this so far to what William Federer put here. Brandon, you got the mic, right?
Two things. The first thing is something that Pastor touched on, which is having to do with the Electoral College and its reflection in the way that our bicameral Congress is set up. Anytime somebody basically protests the Electoral College and says that it's unfair that if a majority of people vote for somebody to be president, that person should be president, what they're actually saying, and you should pin them on this, is that they think that our Congress should be restructured. Because the Electoral College is directly related to the House of Representatives and the Senate. In so much as even each state's electoral power is predicated upon how many senators and representatives they have in both of those houses. So it's not just a protest against the Electoral College, they're protesting the entire system as to how our Congress is set up. They don't want any of the smaller states. They don't want Nebraska to have the same power in the US Senate as Virginia. They don't want Colorado to have the same power as California and on down the line. Because if they don't want it to be in the Electoral College, they're not going to want it in Congress as well. And you can't protest one principle in one application and then say, yeah, but I support it in Congress. It's the same principle. Yeah. Yeah. It's very important to remember.
Very good point.
The second thing is that this, and this might be somewhat unpopular today, is that initially senators were not voted by direct vote. And we need to get rid of the amendment in our Constitution that allows people to directly vote for senators. Because senators were supposed to be voted upon by state legislatures as another insulation against the popular opinion of the people. Senators were much more prestigious than the House of Representatives. Again, going back to the fact that there's equal representation for all of the states. And the fact that you can directly elect a senator makes them really no better than the House of Representatives. Yeah. And it's something that's just never talked about, and it always bothers me. But that amendment needs to be negated.
And when was that amendment
it's much
made?
Better.
Was that early 1900s?
Early 1900s, yeah. When there was the popular direct election movement.
Was that under Woodrow Wilson at all? That I don't remember.
I think it was before him.
Okay. All right. Very good point. How many electoral votes does Colorado have? Okay. How many congressional districts does Colorado have? It's now 8. It was 7, but we added a district, population change. Okay, so according to what Brandon just said, how many electoral college votes does Colorado have? Remember, the number of representatives plus Senate, 10. So we have 10. How many does Wyoming have? How many representatives is Wyoming? How many congressmen or women does Wyoming have? I think it's 1. And then you've got 2 senators. So how many votes do they get in the Electoral College? No, 3. Because you got the 1 representative and the 2 senators. And this is where, okay, the beauty of it is every state has at least 2 votes through their senators. Every state has 2 senators. Going back to what Brandon said about that amendment, it needs to go back to the legislature's appointing the senator. So now you've got this balance that is just, wow, this is tremendous. You know, that God led them, and I believe the Lord did, to come up with this system. But like John Adams said, it's got to be a moral and religious people. Carol.
One thing we need to be aware of, though, the prevailing thought today is that we should get rid of the Constitution because it was written by a bunch of guys that owned slaves. So yep. That's not even a part of something that we should care about, and we need to redo it anyway. And I was at a university, and they had one of those sessions where you could vote on your phone, and they showed what the outcome was. And one of the questions was, what's more important, freedom or equity? And equity was far more important to these college students than freedom was. So when you think about, like, we think that everybody thinks the same way we do about being patriotic, and we love our country, and we love what we're based on, is not the case right now.
And they would change it. They would change it in a heartbeat. Against the Constitution, because the Constitution is an obstacle to so many things that they want to do. You're saying, why are we talking about the Constitution and not the Bible here? Because, like Brandon prayed, we need to know what's happening in our country. And you see what's happening in our country. When you think about the whole picture about our nation on the world scene, now you're getting into prophecy. And you're seeing what could happen. And I'm praying that the Lord will give our country many more years of freedom. And I pray that for our land. So, real quick, be the extremist the left says you are. I saw that somewhere. Be the extremist the left says you are. Because they say you're an extremist. Okay? I go back to William Federer. He had an article called "Who is King in America?" Signer of the Constitution, Governor Morris, stated this magistrate is not the king. The people are the king. Okay, now hang on. John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, wrote in Chisholm versus Georgia in 1793, the people are the sovereign of this country. So you're going to think, well, yeah, so this is going to lead toward democracy, right? James Madison wrote in Federalist Number 46, 1788, the ultimate authority resides in the people alone. President Andrew Jackson to William Lewis in 1841, the people are the government administering it by their agents. They are the government, the sovereign power. And then he put this in there. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. In America, God allowed our founders to set up a system where the people are the governing authority. Politicians are simply elected servants, hired and fired by the will of the people through the election process. So the democratic process is what elects these people to represent us. And they, therefore, are under the people. We, the people, as our constitution. Is it the Constitution? Or is it the Declaration? What starts off with we the people? Constitution. I keep thinking about Barney Fife. have you ever seen, oh, I shouldn't get into that. Barney Fife says to Sheriff Andy, he says, I can recite the Constitution. I can do the preamble to the Constitution. How many know what I'm getting at? Okay, yeah. And the rest is funny as... You know, Barney sits there and tries to think of the first word, can't think of it, and Andy's going, we, and he goes, we, see? And he goes through the entire preamble with Andy telling him every word. And at the end, Barney goes, see? Anyway, I'm going to end with a quote from a preacher. Because, you know, we talk about what's taking place in our country and the fraud in elections, but one of the biggest forms of fraud committed by people is your willingness not to vote. Here's this quote. Bad politicians are elected by good people who don't vote. I did that in steps because I really wanted you to get that. Bad politicians are elected by good people who don't vote. So, don't you dare complain if you don't take the time to vote. Don't you dare complain. I had a secretary of Bob Jones who would not vote. She said, I was just going to go. And I chewed her out. Said, you're part of the problem. You're the problem. Because this country, you have the privilege to vote. And the fact that you're not voting is not only a privilege, it's a right. And the fact that you don't vote, you're affecting me and you're affecting the rest of this country. Lord, may we